This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So I started shivering. I couldn't breathe. Then I called the ambulance. My chest was like, woo, 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 you know. It's horrifying. You feel death. I felt death.
That was Zimbabwean human rights activist Betty Bakoni, who survived COVID-19, describing what it was like to have the disease. Details coming up also. Prices for food and fuel continue to rise in Zimbabwe, worsening an already dire situation. Health workers fighting the coronavirus in Malawi complain of insults, stigma, and discrimination. And an Egyptian poet wins this year's International African Poetry Prize. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. But first, our top story. Civil society leaders in Zimbabwe say a $600 million rescue fund from the government to support vulnerable people during the COVID-19 outbreak has not reached those who need it. Meanwhile, prices for necessities like food, fuel, and internet data continue to rise, worsening an already dire situation. Reporter Kudzai Zenawashi has the details.
With COVID-19 lockdowns in place, after months of increasing market prices, life in Zimbabwe has become increasingly unbearable. Zimbabwe's government is aware of the problem, but the official response has not brought the situation under control. In early April, authorities announced a $600 million fund to support vulnerable citizens during the outbreak. Officials claimed the money was dispersed using a database they collected through a complicated algorithm. But in late April, Minister of Public Service, Labour and Social Welfare, Paul Mavima, said the money was not distributed. Naspa Manyau, a disability activist with an organization called Impairments International Trust, says many Zimbabweans in need did not receive anything from the fund.
As far as I know, I haven't heard anyone who had said they have received any amount from that 600 million among the members of my constituents. So far, we are just trying to find well-wishers to help us with food hampers and sanitizers.
Munyara Dzidodo, editor of the online news site called Open Pali, also says there is no funding coming to vulnerable groups. He says Zimbabwe did not have effective social services in place before the coronavirus outbreak, and it is impossible for the government to build them overnight. He says officials are instead hoping for an international rescue package.
I think the government is just playing delaying tactics. There's a lot of confusion, and I think they know that if they print more money, then that generally will trigger hyperinflation. At this moment, the government is hoping that they'll get some relief from international partners like IMF, World Bank. People, Zimbabweans, should not even look forward to receiving that money. They should just go on with their lives.
But the cost of basic goods continues to rise. There are long queues of people looking for food and fuel and to withdraw cash from banks. This week, internet data prices from Zimbabwe's biggest mobile network operator also shot up by 30% to over 200%, varying between data packages. The data price hikes come as Zimbabweans are relying on mobile internet to stay connected while on lockdown. Thabani Moyo of Media Institute of Southern Africa, or MISA non-profit organization, called on the government to subsidize internet access so people can enjoy their right to associate without exposing themselves to potential COVID-19 infection.
The increases in the data prices are quite disturbing, as you see that literally everyone is relying on data for communication and for their needs towards addressing work and other related issues. It will be increasingly difficult to remain confined when you don't have the means to communicate, save for physical meetings. Hence the need for the government to really look into this. MISA has been spearheading the Data Must Fall campaign, where we are pushing for that same issue.
Prices were expected to stabilize after the government and the business community agreed on a price moratorium on the 22nd of April. But that is yet to be witnessed in the market. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
For more on Zimbabwe's struggling economy, journalist Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare on the government's talks with foreign creditors to clear decades of debt. Zimbabwe's government has warned that without more funds, the country may not cope with the economic impact from COVID-19.
Zimbabwe's minister in charge of mobilizing resources to fight COVID-19, July Moyo, says the country is now relying on its usual friends after the International Monetary Fund refused to provide funds to help the Southern African nation reduce the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic.
As you know, IMF was asked by the UN Secretary General, and an appeal was made to say indebted countries, IMF should give them a reprieve. But for Zimbabwe, we could not be given a reprieve because we had paid our debt. But the World Bank has been giving us assistance, our PPEs and certain medicines, the World Bank is funding, and so yes, we are getting assistance from our usual friends, Chinese, the British, the Americans, European Union, Indians, and some from our neighbors in Southern Africa, even though they also are suffering from coronavirus pandemic.
Zimbabwe's Minister of Finance, Muthuli Ncube, wrote to the IMF for financial assistance and cancellation of its debt so the country could divert its funds to fight the COVID-19 pandemic. But Tendai Biti, an opposition leader and a former finance minister, says Zimbabwe does not deserve assistance from the IMF or international creditors. He says due to corruption and excessive spending, Zimbabwe was in a crisis long before COVID-19 pandemic.
That same embarrassing letter you refer to accepted acknowledges already that the economy contracted by 6% in 2019. And in 2020, our contraction is minus 20%, the worst in the history of the country. So no one should use or hide under COVID.
But not everyone agrees with the opposition's view. Trust Chihokora, an independent economic analyst, says President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government should get financial support to kickstart Zimbabwe's fragile economy and limit the effects of COVID-19 pandemic.
As everybody is aware, Zimbabwe does not have resources at the moment to do this because of the state of the economy. And so multilateral institutions should support Zimbabwe in order to contain this pandemic, which is global in nature. And so notwithstanding any previous positions that institutions could be holding or that other countries may be holding.
Zimbabwe is not one of 25 countries benefiting from an IMF program designed to help address the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. An official at the IMF said the organization would explain that position sometime this week. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
While the whole world is focusing on dealing with the coronavirus pandemic, Libyan rivals are busy battling for military and political gains. Forces loyal to the UN-recognized Government of National Accord have carried out 24 air operations as part of a massive offensive to capture Al-Watiya air base controlled by rebel general Khalifa Haftar, commander of the Libyan National Army. VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shenawi discussed these latest developments with Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis.
If the GNA forces are able to retake Watiya airbase, then this will be a significant symbolic and tactical gain for the GNA, and it will firmly put the balance of power in the favour of the GNA. This is because the LNA has used Wateer Air Base as one of its main air bases in Western Libya, both to launch drone and aerial attacks, but also, more importantly, to fly in assets. So without control of this airbase, the LNA will find it's much more isolated to the south of Tripoli and purely reliant on its remaining stronghold and forward base in the town of Tarhuna, which is also currently being besieged by the GNA forces.
Would that encourage the supporters of Haftar to reinforce him?
Yes, it may be that if the LNA loses Wateer, then some of his key international backers, for example, in particular the UAE, may then use this as a trigger to provide additional kind of aerial assets, potentially also reinforcements on the ground in the form of additional mercenaries. However, part of the problem will be how, you know, logistically, how some of these supplies and reinforcements are able to be transported to the west of Libya. And so there could be quite a big delay in any of that support coming in. So it'll be an interesting time that the LNA could be particularly vulnerable in the coming days if they do lose Wateer.
Faiz Sarraj, the head of the GNA, called on all Libyan parties to swiftly resume political dialogue brokered by the UN. How feasible is such call when there is no UN envoy to Libya and no ceasefire?
Realistically, it's not likely to happen. There is unlikely to be a real, genuine push forward for a political solution in the coming weeks or even months. For any kind of political dialogue to happen, there needs to be some sort of truce or ceasefire on the ground. And that's very unlikely to happen. We saw last week the LNA declared it had agreed to a ceasefire, but this was really hollow. It was kind of a meaningless gesture because without trust or some degree of trust or communication between the GNA and the LNA, there are no conditions that either side will agree to because they will not trust the other side to stick to those. And at the moment, the GNA forces appear very keen to push ahead with their military advantage and make the most of that, while the GNA is very reluctant to admit defeat or to lose further ground militarily. Therefore, a ceasefire is unlikely, and without that, moving forward with genuine political talks is unlikely to happen.
General Haftar announced the formation of a new government following his controversial declaration last week of having a popular mandate to directly rule Libya. Having failed to capture Libyan capital, is Haftar forcing a partitioning on Libya?
I think a partition of Libya is certainly more likely now. His declaration of military rule certainly makes partition of Libya more likely in the longer term. This is because Haftar really has shown that he wants to rule Libya in any way he can. He wants to have complete control, not just as a military commander, but over all of the political and other economic institutions in the country. If he's not able to achieve that by taking control of the government and the institutions in Tripoli, then it's likely he will try and establish this type of control in eastern Libya and either expand it to Tripoli or potentially try and separate from the institutions in Tripoli and set up his own way of running things in the east of the country.
That was Rhiannon Smith, the managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, speaking to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shenawi. Egyptian poet Rabba Ashri is the winner of the 2020 Brunel International African Poetry Prize. The prize comes with a reward of £3,000 British pounds. The university said in a statement that the Chicago-based poet Ashri impressed the judges with her challenging words about exile, the diaspora, and living between languages. Ashri becomes the second Egyptian winner after Nadra Mabrouk won the prize last year. According to the university, today there are legions of African poets building successful careers and being heard. What started off as a fever and a cough turned into a haunting battle with the coronavirus. VOA's Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick brings us the story of Zimbabwean Betty Makoni's difficult road to recovering from COVID-19. Makoni, who is based in the United Kingdom, spoke with Fitzpatrick while self-quarantined in her home.
Betty Makoni is a celebrated champion of women's rights in her home country of Zimbabwe and where she now lives in the UK. In March, Makoni found herself fighting for breath and her life. She spoke with me from quarantine in her bedroom.
You see my chest just closed on 16 March. It just went, that was it. I couldn't breathe. I called ambulance, ambulance came and they like took a swab. Then they were confirming to me that it must be corona symptoms, but they have to go and find out.
So did the doctors tell you it was better to rush to hospital or stay home and weather it out there?
The ambulance failed. I was not such a case that could be in critical hospital given the situation. I could be managed from home. My NHS1 doctor was the one who called me to say it's chest infection. So we have to deal with the secondary symptom. I was bleeding my nostrils. So they said, it might be that we have to fight the infection, but you are not a hospital case at all. So I understood why I shouldn't go. It could be worse.
Despite the help of telemedicine, paramedics and self-isolation, Makoni endured a roller coaster of symptoms.
My blood pressure became stubborn. So I lost like my eyesight. I had no idea that blood pressure is an underlying symptom. No idea and how it could connect it to a virus. I was on antibiotic, I couldn't breathe well. But then they said I should start cardio exercise. So the mucus, the yellow mucus, one of it came out like a thick. I was scared, you know, what kind of mucus would come out of a human being? It was so thick and yellow. So I started shivering, but then it smelled of blood. I couldn't breathe. Then I called the ambulance. My chest was like, you know. So they, at that stage, they told me the virus must be lingering. It's horrifying. You feel death. I felt death. I gave up. There are moments where when I lost my breath the second day, I said, I have lived enough on earth to go. I must go.
Betty, how has this changed you physically and psychologically?
So physically, I am much weaker. I'm much slower. And I think people mustn't underestimate the impact on our bodies, because something we are not sure of was actually taking the better part. I'm a social worker by profession. I'm going to dedicate my life to the mental health of everybody who suffered coronavirus. My message would be, this is the time to prevent. Let's not allow this virus to come. Let's not wait for government lockdown. We will not ask about where it came from. We will ask where it is. So I want every woman to be armed. A lot of social problems are coming as well, economic problems. So we should be ready. It caught us unaware in the UK, even in this first world country. The only thing we can do is let's prepare our homes for this. Learn from our mistakes. Most of us died on the front line. We don't want it to happen in the continent. Let's not take this for granted. Let's really take the bull by the horns.
That was COVID-19 survivor Betty Makoni speaking to VOA's Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick. While health workers fighting the coronavirus around the world have been cheered in public, in Malawi, they complain of insults, stigma, and discrimination. They say they are assumed to have the virus, shunned in public, refused access to public transport, and even evicted from rented houses. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The mayor of Malawi's capital, Lilongwe, recently condemned the practice of shunning healthcare workers for fears they have COVID-19. Juliana Kaduya asked members of the public to appreciate what these workers are doing in saving the lives of coronavirus patients. But a nurse at Kamuzu Central Hospital in Lilongwe, who refused to be named for fear of reprisals, told VOA the abuse continues. We will call her Annie Banda. Banda said in a telephone interview that some passengers blocked her as she tried to climb aboard a minibus on her way to work Tuesday.
She says, when I was boarding a minibus, a female passenger charged at me saying, these are the ones who are carrying Ebola, instead of saying coronavirus, and they should not come in here. Banda said the confrontation forced her to take a taxi to work. The National Organization for Nurses and Midwives of Malawi says it has received several complaints and video clips about minibus operators not allowing nurses to board their vehicles. Its president, Charles Smeza, spoke to VOA.
Even some landlords, you know, have vacated our colleagues and headquarters that are renting out their houses to say, no, you can't be in my house. You guys are infected, so you infect my house. You know, we've received those grievances and we've declined. You know, it's unfair.
Last week, a local online publication ran a story about communities in southern Malawi threatening to evict or kill a health worker who handled a patient later found to be positive for COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. They feared the health worker was also infected and as a result would infect the whole area. Smeza says some health facilities have responded to the complaints by arranging special vehicles to transport their medical staff. Health workers like Banda have resolved to put on civilian gear whenever they travel by public transport. She says, we are now carrying our uniforms in the bags. You can't see a nurse boarding a minibus in uniform. You even can't see a nurse walking in public in uniform to catch a bus. Health Ministry spokesperson Joshua Malango declined to comment on the matter, saying the ministry has yet to receive official complaints from health workers. Lameck Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
A report says the number of children internally displaced because of conflict and violence has hit an all-time high. The UN Children's Fund says an estimated 19 million children have been forced to flee their homes and are living without proper care and protection. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
UNICEF says Syria, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Yemen account for more than one-third of all children displaced within their own countries because of violence and conflict. Other countries that harbor more than 1 million children within their borders include Colombia, Afghanistan, Somalia, Nigeria, and Sudan. A spokeswoman for the UN Children's Fund, Marixi Mercado, tells VOA urgent action is needed to protect those millions of displaced people from the multiple risks they face. She says they lack access to basic services, including education and health care.
They're being uprooted and taken out of their familiar surroundings, exposes them to all sorts of risk. This includes more violence, this includes exploitation, abuse, and even trafficking. Many children are also at risk of being put to work or being married off early and being separated from their families.
Added to the threats is COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. Mercado says the pandemic is making a critical situation worse for the unusually high number of displaced children and their families.
They live in overcrowded camps or informal settlements where sanitary conditions are far from ideal and where physical distancing is simply not possible. COVID-19 is disrupting immunization campaigns across the world. This puts these children at even higher risk of diseases that are vaccine preventable.
Mercado says she fears that could have disastrous consequences for children. UNICEF is appealing to government, civil society, and the private sector to unite and invest in concrete action that can help protect and provide equitable access to essential services for all internally displaced children and their families. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, I'm Yehijis Wuhib in Washington. Thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.